This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today in Season 3, Episode 16, I reshare an interview of myself from June this year, courtesy of Steve Woolley, host of the Eat, Sleep, Run, Repeat podcast. Steve and I share a really positive relationship, of course, through podcasting and running, and do converse quite regularly. Strangely, his sister was actually a teacher of mine many years ago, attending Marist College Ashgrove in Brisbane well before I knew Steve himself. Obviously, I credit this release entirely to Steve's work, but thought it may be interesting to share on this very podcast for the listeners to get to know me further as a person and runner. It was such a privilege to share my running story on the podcast, relationship with my father, who ran a lot, a massive influence on me as a person and runner, my coaching, and I finish with opinions on Super Shoes and the 2024 running boom. A quick heads up, my mic was wigging out a little bit after I dropped it on the ground prior to the conversation, but those who've listened to it on the Eat, Sleep, Run, Repeat podcast didn't seem to notice. Maybe that's just a podcast host ear hearing that. I hope you enjoy something a little bit different and enjoy the podcast, guys. Thank you.
Welcome to the Eat, Sleep, Run, Repeat podcast, Mr. Ollie Jones. Bit of a podcast battle off tonight.
Thank you, Steve Woolley. Yeah, definitely not a battle off. I'm very much looking forward to this for many reasons. And I can see a number of medals and trophies behind you. I just wonder if they're running or martial arts.
A bit of both. I've got all the old trophies were just in a cardboard box. And I was like, I should put them up. My wife hates it. She's like, she just hates this room. But this is like my man cave. So I've just got everything just in here, my records, my decks, all the old trophies. And then I've got the running medals hanging on the same like rail thing. So every time I do a new race, I just slip the new one on the end. Pretty cool.
That's so good, mate. I could easily slide into that room.
Yeah. Blokes love it. Maybe girls, not so much.
That's right.
Yeah, mate. So, I mean, your podcast is going great. You've had loads of guests on, but you're like a top local runner yourself. So people that listen to our podcast probably listen to yours as well. But for the people that don't know, tell us a bit about you, mate.
Yeah, about me. Well, it's a big question, isn't it? Lot to think about, but I'm a Nudgee man, live on the north side of Brisbane and work at the college here, Nudgee College, down the road. Funny enough, Nudgee College is in Boondall and Nudgee itself is, I'm about 5K from school, which works well for the commute. I run on the commute, but I've been teaching for 15 years, Steve, And
really? Wow.
Yeah, still enjoying it and had a variety of experiences too in education in Queensland and private schools, previously a churchy teacher for 4 years and now nudgy. But before I continue talking about work, I should talk about my family. That's probably the most important thing in my life. And yeah, live with a happy, beautiful family, my wife Claire and my two kids Flynn and Addison. Flynn is 3.5 years old and Addison is 6 months actually, just 2 days ago.
Wow. So you've got your hands full at the moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Obviously the podcast is in there and I do a bit of coaching on the side at school and my running myself. So yeah, the weeks are pretty busy, but that's the way I like to live life, live it actively and busily and proactively.
Me too, man. I always say a busy life is a good life. Do you get to run on the track much at the school?
Yeah, I do. And the thing is too, Steve, that I run on that track for years, as long ago as about over 20 years back in my teenage years, representing Met North
Wow.
too on the Nudgee track. And that must have been early 2000s. But now as a teacher there and in my later years as an adult in the last sort of 5 years, I've been on there a lot. But as a teacher now, it's just a remarkable opportunity and to have that access right there on campus as an employee at Nudgee College is so good for running. And not, you know, it's not just the track, it's the campus too. There's amazing grassed ovals, there's a cross country track.
Yeah.
So for me to have access to that is a real privilege.
Mate, I can go you one better on that. Years and years that when we first moved to Australia, we were running for a club called, I don't even think they're around anymore, Brothers Athletics, it was called. And Brothers Athletics used to train at Nudgee on the grass track. And we actually fundraised the first lights that went in there.
Yeah, right.
So when it was a grass track and they had this, you know, just this, I think they were just basically massive timber pylons with some lights on. I think that was around probably like 93, 94, something like that, years ago.
Well, the track was built, I believe, in 99 to be ready for the 2000 Olympics to host athletes and coaches and officials in the college itself, which is pretty cool to think about that 24 years ago where that started. So it sounds about right. It must have been a grass track prior to those days.
Yeah. I just remember it was horrific for mozzies, but it's not that bad anymore.
You know, honestly, I reckon I got it worse down at Churchy in East Brisbane. They back onto the Norman Creek, which feeds off the Brisbane River. They were worse there. They seem to be okay there at the moment.
They must be spraying them. Doing a good job with the spraying, eh? It's working.
Yes.
So you've got a pretty similar story to me. Like you've been running since you're a kid. Your dad is also, wow, he was a top runner in his day, but he's a top runner now. We should give your dad a shout out. I really enjoyed that podcast that you did with your dad. And I always feel like the older guys, they deserve a shout because they're kind of like, not so much the pioneers, but they've been there when we've kind of fell away. Like my dad has run, probably much like your dad, just continuously since his, you know, maybe was his late 20s, early 30s, even when I took off and was nightclubbing and DJing and didn't have anything to do with running at all, he still went, you know, every week, did all the local events and that. And I feel like we owe a lot to those older runners, hey?
Yeah, definitely, Steve. And the thing for Dad is he grew up in Everton Park, right, in the north side of Brisbane. And back then there were even some dirt roads that would lead to where he lived. So to have some rolling dirt hills back then is pretty cruel. And we're not talking about the dark ages here. We're talking about, well, he was born in 59. So looking about, you know, the 70s here where we had access to that kind of environment. But for me, you know, like he was a big part of me early because he didn't force me into running, but he certainly like, He took us to running events, right? That's a natural thing as a father, I think, or a parent, a mother as well, who may run to sort of, if you're doing it, you'd naturally take your kids along to what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if you recall that podcast when I had Dad on, and then that, for a bit of context, that was a few months ago for the listeners, and it's June now. So that was about I think either early May or prior. But the thing there is that was about, must have been about year three, I reckon. And I've got five brothers, but he'd take us along to these Roadrunners events at West End, which is still an event today, a fortnightly event that has run for so many years. And I didn't love it. I'll tell you, Steve, when he took me along to these events, I was actually talking to Dad today about being on here. And I said to Dad, I just have memories back then of always wanting to stop out there, wanting to give up. So maybe those early lessons taught me how to get through that. But that kind of led to like the cross country, right, in primary school. And Dad had always come along to those. And the thing too is, Steve, this is the time my parents separated as well. So for Dad, I think this was a real way for him to connect through running, and particularly
okay.
with me.
Yep.
But we all of us got into cross country as brothers in that primary school time. And I'm talking about like the school carnivals, then the rep stuff. Turalba Park in Everton Park, that is, was a pretty notorious hilly grass course there for the
Remember that
youngsters.
one.
I'm not sure if it's
Yep.
still around
Yeah.
these days, but I've got many a fond memory of running around the course, and Dad would just pop up from wherever. Like, it felt like he just came out of a bush, you know, from every angle, every spot that he could get to. And I think like those early times have paid off to today. Not that it was necessarily a conscious, proactive or forceful thing that he did, but just that he loved his running. And I think coupled with that that early exposure to the race scene, and then sort of, you know, observing and supporting my running, that surely must have had an effect.
Yeah, definitely. I credit a lot of like just life skills I have to things I learned running as a junior, like just, you know, pushing yourself beyond it. Just, it makes you tough, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And he always have a few sayings. Funny enough, I swam a lot in school, Steve, and I just remember him talking to me about, he used this analogy that I was a shark. You know, you're a little shark, Ollie, as you swim through the water. You're so fast. And even in the swimming too, he'd actually walk along the side of the pool. And when we every time we'd breathe, so I'd breathe to the outside of the pool, he'd be there either pulling a face or giving me a cheer. So it was just this sort of omnipresent person in whatever physical pursuit I did, but a lot of it was swimming and running. Played a lot of tennis as a youngster too, but that was more so mum's, I think, influence. That was what she was into. But he was definitely more of that competitive endurance kind of a supporter and athlete himself, as opposed to the actual sports.
Yeah. So you could swim too. Did you get into triathlons?
Yeah, funny enough, that did lead to some triathlon in my early 20s. Yeah, if I backtrack a little bit too, before I get to the triathlon, if I can talk about the high school as well, Steve,
Yeah,
because
for sure.
that
Yep.
I had a funny time there. I actually gave it up in years 7 and 8. And I tell a pretty interesting story here because I've got a memory, and I went to Marist College, by the way, in Ashgrove, and also Ashgrove State School. So a bit of a shout out to those schools. They're still running pretty well, from what I hear. But in year 7 and 8, I actually gave up running altogether. And the reason for that was I started to get into rugby, right? And Marist was massive in rugby back then. So to be this like macho, bigger, muscly kind of character was the real sort of norm.
Yeah.
And honestly, I felt a bit self-conscious being this like skinny little nerd.
Yeah.
So all I wanted to do was sort of not run, get bigger and fit in with the crowd. So I didn't really run at all in year 7 and 8. And the thing is, I started back into it in year 10. And funny enough, I tried out for the team and I'd won it. So, but this is the, at that time, it must have been 6K or 4K cross country. And also the 1500 meter event on the track in athletics. So I put that down to also not having an amazing year level for athletics back then, because my times aren't great. But yeah, in terms of where I placed, I was the best 1500 meter runner and 3K runner and also cross country at that very time. So that, I reckon, that gave me some hope to continue running.
Bit of confidence. When you say rugby, was that union or
yeah, absolutely.
union?
Yeah, it's,
Yeah.
yeah, if you ask
Okay.
someone that has anything to do with Marist, they definitely laugh at you and rugby league is now a thing, but never. It used to be all rugby union and the sport is dying. But back in the 2000s when it was thriving, the Wallabies were winning. And,
yeah,
you
massive.
Know, more people, adults and boys, were playing it. And definitely not so many girls either back then, but definitely the boys in those private schools. It was just a real thing, a real notion surrounding Morris College.
I wonder if the like rugby training sort of helped you with a bit of strength and helped with the running.
Yeah, I think all those sports definitely did help. And the thing now is, Steve, because I get an insight as a teacher, they don't do much sport as in variety. They sort of do 2-3 sports maximum. Now in year 12, I think I did 8 sports, and that number is always in my mind because I was quite not boastful about it, but like really sort of proud of myself for doing a lot of sport. But I reckon I was a jack of all trades, master of none kind of a thing back then, because I remember doing cricket, swimming in term one. Term two became like cross country, and then tennis came in, did some AFL. Term two was rugby, sorry, missed the actual big one I was talking about earlier, and some water polo towards the end. So
water polo, shit. Oh, because you can swim. Yeah, makes sense.
So I did it all. But I reckon definitely you're right. There's lessons you learn out of that. And also obviously physical things, skills and strengths that can be taken into running for sure.
So when you say they only sort of do 3 sports now, why do you think that is?
I think it's a couple things. One is really wanting to specialize early and be as good as you can and put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak, to get the most out of what you have. The other two is often you're not allowed to. The coaches and the systems don't allow boys to double up because it just clashes so much. The thing is, when I went through school at least, you didn't train as much as now. So they train almost every day of the week in most sports, whereas when I trained, it was like, twice a week, then you might compete on a Friday. So that makes it difficult. And then the other one too is like injury. They're very wary, parents of boys now, or girls rather. I'm saying boys, as obviously I'm working in a boys' school there at Nudgee. They're very wary of potentially being injured affecting their primary sport.
Man, I have like pretty strong, well, I guess only with running, just through my own kind of experiences, but I sort of have a pretty strong opinion that just let kids be kids, you know. Maybe when you get to say 16, 17, you could sort of take it a bit more seriously. But until then, it's sort of pointless. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I completely agree. As I said, I think it's systematic often in these private schools. I'm hoping in the state schools there's, you know, that idea is hopefully prevalent out there amongst the parents and kids, that it's just so important, I think, in so many ways to delay it. And I guess we'll probably get talking to training age at some point during this conversation. But and what I mean by training age is like when you really sort of start to get into your running. Because if you start later, you can improve later in your life. If you start early, you can, and I've seen young athletes burn out or get to 100K by the time they leave school. And well, you don't have much to go, you know, to go from there, do you?
It's crazy. It's crazy. But yeah, I kind of was doing that. Not 100Ks, but I was training so hard from such a young age that by the time I sort of got to even like I reckon around 15, I was just getting so sick of it, you know, just too much. And then when it started actually making a difference, I was over it, you know. And then the performances started getting worse because I wasn't training. And I just think, man, with my kids, I'm just going to leave them be and just enjoy whatever sport they're playing for as long as they can. And then if they want to get serious, they can. But, yeah, no pressure.
No, exactly. Yeah. And the thing too back then is because I'm in my mid-30s now. And back then I was looking up a few photos, actually. I've got a few photos in the archive, Steve, of when I was running and representing Morris College. And what I was looking for was a watch on my wrist, and I could not find a photo with a watch on. And the reason I had to check that, because my memory completely escapes me as to whether I wore a watch or not. And I don't think I did through school wear a watch. I have no idea what shoes I wore. And I've got memories of the teachers or coaches just saying, boys, head down the road for a few K, come back in half an hour, and you're all good.
Yeah,
and they're like yeah. that, they just wouldn't pass these days.
No Strava,
but I definitely
no.
think there's still yeah. something to that, eh? Like getting off the data, getting off Strava, more so as in like when you're actually running, enjoying the run and not letting the stats and data concern you.
Yeah. So did you get pretty serious towards the end of school or?
Yeah, I did to a degree, but as I alluded to, like I was the best in my year at the school at that time, but I didn't make it far past, I think, regionals, never a state runner in any capacity. And I've got a memory too of running against a very prominent athlete at the time, Nick Toohey, previous guest, 800 meter runner, who ran a minute 48 in high school. Hopefully I got that right, Nick, if he has a listen. And I think that's still the Nudgee College record. But I remember going to places like the Nudgee track and just getting destroyed by athletes who are way faster than me. So I'm talking about back then running, like I was no quicker than 4:30 over 1500 by end of school. 800, I'd never had speed for that. I can't recall being anywhere under even 2:10. And in the 3K, I was a 9:40 something from memory. And in the 6K, again, I don't think I wore a watch, but 21 has always rung a bell in my mind that I was 21 something over hills at Limestone Park in Ipswich on the grass, which, yeah. You know, all those times are solid, but
yeah,
you know, I did get quite destroyed back then. I get absolutely and utterly seen behind now these days, that all those times you're taking off a significant amount of time now.
Isn't Nick Toohey, was he an Olympian? Did he go to the Olympics?
He was from memory, he trialed for the Outcome World Games at the time and was on the brink of that. But he suffered some injuries at that time. But one of the most promising athletes to go through, obviously 1:48. I wonder where that sort of tracks of all time. At that age, even in Australia, it'd be right up there. But still work with Nick now. He's the head coach of athletics and cross country at the moment at Nudgee College. And great guy, right. and good coach. So he's now spending his time definitely not running as much as he did, but he's an amazing guy and coach and spreads his wisdom and enthusiasm to all the boys, which is awesome.
Yeah, sorry. Whilst we're on the subject of that, did you see that? I'm sure he's from Eaton's Hill. Peyton Craig. See, he just made the qualifier for the Olympics on the 800. Fuck, man,
I believe it was a high 1:44 in the 800.
He's incredible, eh? Like, he just is some talent, that kid.
Yeah, he's not a local. I'm pretty sure he's a coastie. I think he's Sunny Coast from memory. I could have that wrong. So, but definitely have been observing the running. Always do of late, and that gets him. I think he's close to the top three of all time, and maybe fourth of all time. And Joey Dang, Peter Bowl will be up there. I just can't think of a third as we speak, but he's right amongst the mix now.
Yeah, I think he's third fastest in the Olympic qualifying time. So I don't know if that gets him automatic selection or not, but. He definitely puts himself in with a good chance, especially because he just keeps improving.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many they're picking for the track now. We've obviously seen the marathon teams be selected, and there was three for that. I just don't know if that number's the same now.
Yeah, might only be two.
You know, 10K and below, that is.
Might only be two. It seems like the selectors do like that, though. If you're showing a bit of promise and you get close, they... more likely to pick you.
Yeah, well, we've seen discretion very, very evident amongst the female selection, haven't we? So it's not the fastest that gets picked, is it?
No, it's very strange. But you can't help but feel sorry for Lisa Waitman. She seems like she sort of gets the rough end of the deal. I was pretty sure they were going to do the same thing to Liam Adams, but he's in, so he's right. So it's just Lisa left.
Yeah, he
left.
Was right. Then he was cut off. They changed the time for any athlete, any country making the marathon, and then he was put in late.
Yeah.
So it's funny how it works. And yeah, now there's Brett Robinson, Pat Tiernan, and him. It's three men in there. And, you know, he's arguably been our best marathoner, even though Brett's got the record now for the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, he did that runner he did at the Gold Coast was so good. He just only just missed out on the time, hey, but
yes. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, so when you finished school, did you keep running or did you find the nightclub district like most of us do?
I think you know the answer to that question, Steve.
Yeah.
We had a chat about that off air, but let's let the listeners know of my life back then. And the definite answer is no. I went straight. Maris College has a real connection with the Jeeps Ashgrove Rugby Union Club, literally a K off the campus. So, yeah, if you're playing rugby there, it's still pretty similar these days, a little bit less so, but you'd head directly from rugby in year 12 to the club at Jeeps. And I stayed there for about 5 years playing footy and as you alluded to, probably partying too much. But I've got no regrets of that time. Like I had a really good time with my mates from school, and I've got plenty of mates still from school to this day. The challenge came when I sort of reached my mid-20s, and which is a while to think that I was sort of partying for 7 years. But at that time, I started to get a little bit over it. And yeah. I had this, I was talking to a mate today actually about parkrun. And I remember it must have been about 2012 sometime. And parkrun in Brisbane was founded, I think the very first parkrun was Southbank, but I think the second was New Farm. And it must have been around 2010-ish. So I hope I got that right. But around 2012, I started looking online for runs to do. And I Googled something like, I don't know, how many guests here, like Brisbane running, and park runs come up. I'm like, what's this park run thing all about? Where's that? And where do they do it? Park run sounds like you're running on grass somewhere. I don't want to run on grass. I want a flat road or concrete, none of this grass stuff. But I found out there was one at New Farm, and started to go along to that. And this, I'm talking again about my mid-20s, and I was looking at the archives today, actually, Steve, and I was running about 21 minutes when I came back.
That's so talking,
I never run a 5K in school. I reckon if I'd run it, I'd probably be somewhere at that time in the 17s, but as a guess, so to go to 21 at mid-20s where I was weighing about 85 kilos, 15 kilos heavier than now, and doing a lot of weights, as I said, partying a bit more, straight in there. And I guess a lot of people would hear that number 21 and think, well, you're crazy, that's an awesome time, and it is a pretty good time. But I sit here now as a 16:30 guy, and I find it funny that I was at 21. I started to break 20 minutes after about a year or so, and just thought I was the fastest person out there. And
you probably would have been right up there.
No one was running back then, right?
Yeah,
so like
yeah.
I started to podium park runs after a few years, like maybe 3 or 4 years, running down at like 18-19 minutes, whereas now you just get dusted running those times. So yeah, that running those park runs, I reckon it sort of saved me from that partying scene. And I did go at it too hard. I'd go there every week and just run hard week in, week out. But I think there's something about it that made me sort of lay off the partying. And I definitely had a night out or two before a park run. I remember even going to concerts with my wife, 10 years ago, thinking we wouldn't be getting too intoxicated over the night, but having a handful of drinks till like midnight and thinking, I'll go park run tomorrow. I'll just have a 5 hour nap and I'll be sweet. Now I'm in bed at like by the 8 o'clock with no alcohol.
Yeah.
So things change, don't they?
Yeah. But even like you have a few beers the night before a park run, it still makes you feel like shit the next day. You don't feel as fresh as you normally would. It definitely puts you off drinking.
Yeah, absolutely. And it must be something in that for other runners. And I can't credit parkrun entirely for that, but what I noticed was still sort of heading out with mates from my mid-20s and them wanting to continue the night out and And I sort of pulled a pin early, and all, you know, back then it was like, oh, what are you doing? You're a pussy, mate. You're leaving early. What's going on? Stay with the boys. You know, all the heckle that you used to get. You probably have those memories yourself. And I had to start being that guy. I was like, I'm done. See you later. And I just kept saying that for weeks. Next week went out. See you, boys. Where are you going? Oh,
I just used to
I'm over it.
say,
I'm
I'm
tired.
just going to the toilet. And then they're just gone.
And then
Don't
the
have to
smoke
have
bomb
that
technique came
conversation
in.
then, eh?
I think that had too many to sometimes get away with the smoke bomb. So
Yeah.
that started to become more frequent. And I reckon, I'm 36 now. I don't honestly think I started to properly train even into my 30s, even though I've been running again now for, like, if we consider that, maybe 11, 12 years, where I sort of started to come back to running to some capacity. And we're talking, like, 20K weeks tops at in those first few years.
So when did you sign up with the Burt Squad?
So that was, I think, two years ago, end of 2022. So I'm heading into almost 2 years with Bert. And geez, it's an amazing idea, Bert, because Bert started when halfway through, I'd started my own running group years ago in 2014. And Bert was founded in 2016 from memory. So 2 years into me being a coach to an adult run group, which was pretty much recreational runners, quite a slow group, a few quick runners in there. But I always had this idea, if I wasn't a coach, I'd go to Bert. And it took me, 6 years later to get there, because I coached along the way, and happy to talk about that as well, if you want to. But by end of 2022, which is only almost 2 years ago now, I joined Bert, and geez, it transformed me as a runner. Not just the fact that you're running around there. Bert's got about up to 50 runners, both women and men, around New Farm Park, which is an amazing training venue. But the people too, because the people, like you probably experienced yourself, Steve, with the Bush Turkey guys, to a degree, in other running groups. I think you've been to the Alpine Striders too. Is that right? You're just talking about running all the time. Yeah, and you just don't, like, you can't talk to running like that to people at work or even your family. Like, my wife's a bit of a runner, but we've got kids now. She doesn't care that much about it at the moment. I'm hoping she comes back if she listens to this at some time this week. Please do come back. It was good running with you. But I think just those conversations, you learn so much by talking. And that's what makes you knowledgeable, right? In my mind, is learning off others. So definitely learned a lot. And still PBing today from starting there 2 years ago.
Sorry, mate, jumping back. So you got back into your running. At what point did you start coaching?
Yeah,
And
so
what made you want to start coaching?
I'm going to give my shout out, another shout out to Dad, because in 2014, as I alluded to, he actually, well, I failed to mention him earlier, Steve, and I should do that, because a part of me, when I was socializing, I might start using that word now because I don't want to keep talking about drinking and alcohol, but socializing and partying then, he was always in the back of my head, because he, at this point, he was sort of in his late 40s and he was still running a lot. So I'd wake up hungover in the morning, and hear about him going out for a ride or a swim or a run or whatever. He did a triathlon himself. And that just didn't sit well with me, that this guy, my father,
A little
who
bit of
supported me
guilt.
many years ago, he was there cheering me on. I'm just some sack of nothing, waking up with a headache and unable to move all day. I've got to sort this out, right? So this is 2014. He had an idea to get a running group together himself. So it wasn't actually my idea, but it'd be a year later that I'd take it over, because he moved away, and he was the one that knew the runners. He was the one that was knowledgeable and wise about running. So he was the main coach. I was just some measly assistant, his son, just helping out on the side. I think eventually I ended up coaching a Thursday night. He'd coach a Tuesday night. And then, he moved away after a year. And that entire year, Steve, it was all voluntary. So we donated to a course called Micro Projects, basically, who cater for injustices around Brisbane, like homelessness. So any payments that were made were donated to this group. So the really hard thing for me
Cool.
was the end of that time when he left, and he went to Oxford. overseas to study. He's sort of semi-retired from his architectural job to study. He said, Ollie, I think you've got a bit of a base here now to make this into a business. And I said, Dad, nah, we can't do that. Like, that's not what this is about. Like, we've been donating for a year here.
Yeah.
You know, this shouldn't be our money. And he's like, man, this is a real moment for you. Like, you love your running. The people enjoy it. They're learning a lot. I think just start off cheap and just see where it takes you. And we did. Like, it was like $5 a session or something back then.
Fair
But,
enough.
You know, it involved real structure. Structure to the week and the month and the program for the entire year, you know, considering races and online programming to the athletes. And as I said, I'm talking real recreational sort of base. And I can't remember the stats. I was a real Excel spreadsheet guy, mate. Loved my data, and all my data was through there for who attended and how much they paid and all that. But yeah, there's hundreds of runners that come through. But we generally get about 20 to 30 runners by the end. And this was an evening thing too, which
Wow.
I used to love running in the night. Now I hate it.
Yeah.
So that I actually changed that in 2018 and 19 to mornings, which saw us lose a few runners, but gain a few as well. And yeah, by 2019, I finished it because I went over to Churchy to teach and subsequently coach there as well. There's no way I was teaching and coaching in a new private school and soon to be, I was just engaged too, and to have a family. So I thought I'd give it all up and start focusing on other things.
So where was your coaching group based at?
Yeah, so we'd meet at the base of the Kewalpa Bridge there in West End, and it was an awesome location. And now being so commonly used by groups anywhere along there, Riverside Drive and South Bank and the bridges for a bit of hill work. So it was such an awesome location to have that variety and access to a lot of people working who'd knock off and then just come over to the sessions. So that quickly flipped to sort of my thing and really got me passionate about other people. And what I learned from that is that the running community and how amazing it is that these guys trusted me and they'd rock up from wherever they were working, any challenges in their day. And we sort of wouldn't go there. It was just like having chats about running, like I spoke about with Bert. They're all runners in my mind. I didn't sort of even know sometimes what they did for a job. They could have been a high level doctor for all I knew, or just a cleaner down the road.
Yeah.
At some low level business. And again, in my mind, they were a runner and a good person, and definitely got me passionate about sport.
Awesome. And then so you went to Churchy and it was just too far with the travel and.
Yeah, well, we were driving from Banyo. We bought there in 2018. Driving there to West End, we'd wake up. The wife and I would wake up at, and before we were even engaged, at bloody 4:30 a.m. For those 2 years to get there. Otherwise, I was working at a state school up at Narangba Valley, Steve, near Caboolture, when it was nighttime in the evening, starting at 6. So I'd drive like it's at least an hour. I just woke up to like 5 o'clock and then just drive all the way there to West End. It just wasn't plausible moving forward logistically with where we lived, with coaching at Churchy and potentially planning to have kids in the future.
You end up spending so much time traveling and you get stuck in traffic and oh, it's just draining, hey, burning the candle at both
Absolutely.
Ends.
Yeah, and that honestly, as we spoke about training age before, I think it extended that because I was always ran with the group, and some coaches don't do that, but I ran and often ran at about, you know, 90, 95%, never really reaching full potential. And I'll give a few shout outs to a few mates, James Hollenby, he comes to mind if he were to ever listen to this, Callum Prasser, these guys were towards the front of the group with me, whereas, you know, I was that sort of the lead runner most of the time. Not that I was anything special around the community or running circles, but in that group I was. So going to Bert, as I said, transformed me a few years later.
Well, let's talk about Bert. I mean, because we do get quite a few overseas listeners. Do you want to just explain to people who, or even if they're not from Brisbane, what, like, if you're from Brisbane, you'll know who the Bert Squad are. If you're interested in running, you rock up to an event, you see the Bert singlets everywhere, and you you instantly know that there's all the place getters right there. But
yeah,
just
I'm in trouble
people
now.
who might
Even
not
I get
know,
that.
yeah, what is the burp squad?
Yeah, it's an amazing theme because, as I alluded to before, it's a running group for fast runners. And that's a funny word to throw around because Pete Bracken, who's the facilitator and founder, co-founder of the group, you know, he sort of runs the show and he decides who comes in there, but it's not sort of a cutoff. It's, you know, people will chat to him and try and get in the group and sort of present times to him and you know, they'll come for a run and see how they go. But it's a group of fast runners, both men and women. And training at New Farm Park, running at 5:15 in the morning meeting time, and it's free. So Pete probably himself wouldn't admit that he's a coach. He does set the program and training, but he's not a coach in the sense that he's writing us all online programs. He's more of that organizer, motivator, facilitator, and an amazing person and runner himself.
Yeah.
But what it's led to is almost everyone who goes there, some obviously burn out or get injured or leave, but most of them love it, continue with it, and primarily running wise have just got faster and faster. So yeah, that's basically it in a nutshell.
So BERT, that is that Brisbane Elite Running Team, is that what that stands for?
Yeah, correct. And at the time, Steve, when it was founded, there wasn't any other group around like them, and there still really isn't in Brisbane,
yeah,
and a lot of cities. And that, you know, each person and group are into their own thing, but to have a group like that, and the Bush Turkeys are probably, I think of them almost next now. They're just going
not
next
far
level
behind them.
With not necessarily, it's not just the fast runners. You know, the group's about people who are really passionate about running itself, and I find that the Bush Turkey group in Brisbane too are like that, in the sense that that they have both of those.
Yeah, it's I've done a couple of the BERT sessions. Is it Tuesday mornings they do?
Yeah, Tuesday more formally, and then they've got a threshold run on a Friday, which is basically time orientated for That's even for the faster runners. I'm definitely the slowest there usually, trying to hang on, but it gets me faster. And that's a different location as well.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You just heard that. You've run 16:30 over 5K and you're one of the slower runners. What's the quickest 5K time they've ever had?
Yeah. So it's funny you ask, because Peter Bracken actually released that list recently before the annual BERT Speedy Park Run the other week at Sandgate, another amazing event here in Brisbane. But I think if he includes Adam Fogg, who I know that you've had on the show, haven't you?
Yeah.
And you speak to Foggy, he'd still credit himself as a BERT runner. He's still in the Strava group. And we're talking about now a guy who's trying to make the Olympics of the 1500 meter, who's run at 3:48. In the mile, and he's run as quick as 3:33 in the 1500 meter. He's an anomaly. You know, he's a real professional athlete now, but he'd be up there with Kieran Perkins. And I think of times, Foggy now could probably break 14. It just depends. I'll have to find the list sometime for you. But
there's just so many fast runners. Like, if you're trying to get quicker, there's nothing better than joining a group like that, is there? You just get dragged around in every session.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so Kieran's broken 14. I don't know if Foggy has, because he's focused very much on the 1500 overseas now, and his citizenship is with England, but he'd be a sub 14 runner for sure now.
Yeah.
And then there's a number of runners in the low 14s. I'm talking, like, I think Pete sent through the top 20 the other week, as I said, and All these guys were sub, I think they're all sub 15, if not 15:30.
Yeah,
so just for a 16:30 guy, on average, I probably am average in that group. When I go to a session, I'm somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So it really is remarkable.
But that's good. Like, I mean, what do you say? You're mid-30s, you still got heaps of improving. And on the positive side, you haven't smashed yourself through your 20s, so you've probably still got a lot of legs left in you. So if you just train smart, there's nothing to say you can't keep getting quicker and quicker and quicker.
Yeah, I think so. And the athletes out there, especially the women now, hey, these marathoners who are late 30s and a lot of them 40s with kids, that's just inspiration for all of us, isn't it?
Yeah.
That we can continue to do that. And it, as you said, Steve, it is a lot about being smart, not overdoing it. And I think potentially, like I mentioned, running with my group back in the day and of more recent times at Nudgee and Churchy, I run with the boys when I coach there. And, you know, it's impossible to run 100% when you're coaching as well. You want to have something in there to be a motivator and encourager and do your job.
Yeah. Otherwise you'd be walking around like a zombie, like I was yesterday.
After your 35K.
Yeah. God, that was tough. Mate, your podcast, let's talk about that. It's the Local Legends in Running podcast. You've had so many great guests on there. You've had like Olympians, but then you've also had like local guys, kind of like what we do. Why did you start your podcast? And tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I mentioned off air, there's so much to talk about for me. And I will actually get you on here in the next week. That's our plan, for you to talk about your story. I'm sure you'll have similar, you know, the amount of things to talk about. But one for both of us is this podcast. For me, it actually started at a very similar time to your podcast, Steve, which was early 2022. And honestly, I think I had no idea that you had one till later that year. So I, unfortunately, I can't give you the shout out or credit to starting one. But the funny thing is I actually had no intention to even start a podcast. Where it started was getting a hold of now one of Australia's greatest 5 and 10K runners of all time, Kai Robinson, who's still, I think, about 22 or 3. I wanted to get some content from him for Churchy itself as the head coach there a couple of years ago for a cross-country camp. So I said to the director, and the director sort of facilitated and organized these sports in these private schools. I said, mate, to Mike, his name was, I'd love to get some speak to Kai, who's an old boy, that is, I didn't mention that, from Churchy itself. He was and still is training over in America, and back then was still competing at a very high level, just to have a chat with him online from America to Brisbane, as you might have experienced with overseas athletes yourself. And mate, we spoke for like 3 hours, partly because I was a pretty rubbish interviewer back then. And the other reason too was Kai was just so generous with his time. And
sorry, did you say he's an ex-Churchy?
Yeah, correct. Yeah.
I never knew that. Wow.
Yeah. So I think he broke the record for the 6K at the time. Back then, again, at the what do they call it? Limestone Park at Ipswich, when he ran about 5-6 years ago. And, you know, it was a good time. It's been broken now. And he wasn't, and I think he might have broken a 1500 meter record too. So he's definitely quick, but not absurd. So I thought, there's no better bloke to have a conversation with to share content to the current cross country team of 20, I think it was 2022. Yeah. To share at this cross country camp. So yeah, we chatted for 3 hours, went on tangents. I was using a Jabra headset on a school computer, which is basically one of those like talkback microphones for even people in like, who work for RACQ or like some job in communications where they've just got that little stick in front of your mouth.
Yeah.
I look back, listen back to the audio now. It's terrible. So in my opinion, I just cringe at those first few episodes that, how much I've improved as an interviewer, but also the audio quality. And after that conversation, I had a bit of feedback from not just Tim, but some others saying, hey, mate, I reckon that was pretty good. I've learned a lot. And, you know, things like, oh, you're a bit of a natural in this kind of thing. And I was still thinking, no, I'm not. That was pretty bad. then I just had this idea. And this was during, Steve, that second COVID wave too, wasn't it? Or third, how many, did we have two or three? It was a weird time anyway of being isolated. So that was part of the inspiration too. And I thought, I'll just give this a crack. And I wouldn't say I'm an extrovert, nor would I say I'm an introvert, but definitely not at that time extroverted enough to think that I could do it, to be online and talking. And there's no podcast back then. I think you and I were the only probably running podcasts in Brisbane
Yeah.
and Queensland. Now there's heaps. And I thought, oh, I should reach out to someone. And I'd known a few runners by then who would be willing to talk about running, I was looking for someone a little bit faster, who people know. And that person was Clay Dawson. Amazing guy, lovely guy. And shot him, I think it was an Instagram message. And within, I think, a couple of hours, he responded saying, mate, when do we start? Is this today or tomorrow?
Oh, cool.
I just thought, oh, no, I'm on here. So did a lot of prep, hours of prep. This conversation with Clay Dawson, who, as you know, too, Steve, he's been an amazing runner in Brisbane and Australia for many, many years. And he was just amazing and generous with his time. And I think what I learned from early time in the podcast was that, you know, these people, most of them, particularly in the first 10, 15 episodes, weren't people that had been on podcasts. So for them, I think it was quite special to be heard talk about their own training. You know, again, like we spoke about talking to runners, there's something different about it. And speaking of introverts and extroverts, have many of the both. And I just find it awesome to see that the introverted ones, just if you make them feel comfortable talking about running, that they can and they love it. And that's been probably my mission since, is seeing them spread the good word of running and people learn about it.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because I think I'm the same. Like I'm in the middle, like exactly the same as you, but I've got a music podcast that I do as well, not as frequently as a running one, but the thing I notice that's different with the DJs is you can't shut them up, whereas the, you know, so with the runners, they're always a little bit more apprehensive, or you know, they're a bit more worried about what they say. When I interview the DJs, it's the opposite. I'm trying to like wait for a split second to jump in and shut them up. They don't stop. But yeah.
Well, that feels like me now, actually, when you speak of that, just because I've got so much to talk about in my mind. But I've definitely experienced the same thing, and some people need a bit of prodding, and others can just talk and talk. And Pat Carroll comes to mind, of a legend, so to speak, literally, who I just had to hit record and pretty much listen to him, which was so insightful for me and the community to hear about his experiences and what an athlete and contributor now he's been to running for many years.
Yeah, like I've listened to a few podcasts with him. We had him on ours as well. I listened to him on yours, and he's another one that's kind of been stiffed with the selection, the Olympic selection, and you feel sort of like when he got his OAM award, you feel like he's kind of not made up for missing out on the Olympics, but he's got something sort of back from it, you know. He's got some kind of recognition. So I was stoked for him for that, because, you know, definitely one of the best runners Brisbane's ever produced, and still does so much for the running scene and the community. I mean, even if people listening, if they don't know who Pat Carroll is, you guarantee you they've heard his voice at one of the events. He's always doing the emceeing, isn't he?
Yeah, that escaped my memory. He's an announcer too. And, you know, the thing is, everyone's got a story to tell. And like you said earlier, and like you've had on the Eat, Sleep, Run, Repeat podcast, when you've got that variety, you've got someone real local who's had a struggle in their life, a challenge getting to where they are versus a high-level athlete. It's always interesting. You know, Claire Geraghty comes to mind if she listens to this. I wanted to give her a mention because she sits amongst the most listened ever podcast on my podcast, or episode rather, I should say, because she's just got such an amazing story. I'm not sure if you're aware of it or listen to that episode. I'm not sure if she's been on any other podcast. Maybe she has, but she's faced many a setback with her running, and you know, to see that as her in that, she's in the top five, I think, from memory, really resonated with me that people like to hear the stories. They'd like to find connection within it, because anyone can look up PBs and achievements, anyone can watch a race, but I think people want to hear about their experience and their stories and how they juggle that around their life as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's got to be a bit. Sometimes it's nice when it's a bit more relatable, hey? Not just like some guy who's just some phenomenal athlete, never had to face any kind of adversity, just keeps breaking PBs after PBs.
Yeah, and never
it just
injured.
Seems to, just, yeah, just seems to keep coming. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mate, what? So we've talked about your 5K PB, 16:30. What's your what's some of your other PBs? Like, what have you run 10K in?
Yeah, sure. Before I talk about my PBs, by the way, I always feel self-conscious because, again, I train with a group called Bert that we spoke about, and I'm nowhere to be seen against some of these guys, but happy to talk about them. And it's funny because I always make the guests comfortable when they come onto my show about who cares how fast you are. And now look, who's a self-conscious one. But anyway, I run a 3K actually a few years back for the very first time on the track, and I think it was a 9:50. And then the 5K 16:35 at Sandgate Park Run last year, 2023. The 10K 2 years ago, Bridge to Brisbane, 34:35. Then I thought,
that's flying.
The Bridge to Brisbane's always mythically and spoken about being short. I'll go back that up on the track, prove myself right, and did 25 laps in the 10K champs, I think in November, end of 2022, Cusack. And the winner was Gus Gannon at 30, the last guy. Gus Gannon's a local amazing runner, by the way. Last guy was 42. There was about 10 blokes in the race. It was really, really thin. I was solo for a lot of it and run a 34:45. So in my mind, that was pretty well backed up. But I was
brilliant
sort of,
run. Yeah.
Mid-range there considering those times. And then the half. So the half, I just love the half. I'm not sure about you, but I just reckon it's my most favorite event because I think you just get a bit more time. It's more of a journey. It's not as unpredictable as the marathon and obviously as a challenge. So yeah, last year at Noosa PB there with an hour 17:20. And then 2 months later, roughly to Gold Coast PB again at an hour 16:50. So funny enough, both were 3:38 pace on the watch. But Noosa tends to get long considering all the turns and the traffic you're running through.
God, man, that's a great time. 1:16. Even if it's 1:16 high, geez, that sounds good, hey?
Yeah. I'm content with it, but I never feel good enough, which is partly a problem, partly a pro to me as a person.
Mate, I tell you, you wouldn't have been too far behind Monongetti that year.
Yeah, correct, actually. Funny story with that, actually, you mentioned Monongetti because I officially met him in that run. And, I think he did an hour 15 or 16 from memory. And my brother was there to support me and got a photo of Mona and I. And, had a really good chat with Mona. Felt about half an hour, but it was only 2 minutes. I think I was just super tired.
Yeah.
And, great guy and still so fit, isn't he? I think he's now in his 60s.
Yeah, I think he's 65.
Is he? Yeah.
Is he? Have I got that
right? Yeah, actually, 65? You're probably right because I think he's a very similar age to my dad. Yeah.
Yeah, just incredible, man. Like how he can still run these paces. Like, yeah, I've talked to my dad about this and we kind of like, you say like, oh, you know, obviously he's intelligent. He does the right training, but there's definitely some like just God-given talent still in them legs, hey, to be able to run like that at his age, breaking world
just
records.
Yeah, it's a commitment, I think, too. You know, there's not many runners out there who ran so elitely and for many years have continued to get the most out of himself. And that's where runners, tend to give up when they can't run as fast as they used to.
Yeah.
And, Peter Lewis is a great example of a mate of yours, a previous guest on your podcast, who continues to try and get the most out of himself. But there's not many like that, is there? It's a real attribute to have, a real credit to guys like them.
You know, another guy I really respect too, I want to get him on the podcast, but I want to make sure I do like as much research as I possibly can. But a guy, Ben St. Lawrence, you know,
oh,
him?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's the same. He's just still competing. You know, he's probably maybe getting a little bit slower every year, but he's still out there having a crack. And I love that.
I think
that.
He just podiumed actually in a recent, the cross country scene's massive down in Victoria. And I'm not sure the event and exactly where it was. I was flicking through, all my Strava followers, as I often do. I get lost in trying to follow all these amazing human beings. But I think he podiumed none other than Ed Goddard, who won it. And I'm talking, I think it was a 10K. I think he'd run 31 something or 32 across. This is cross country, right? You know, grass and hills.
So, hilly course. I think it was that was the state champs.
Yeah, it might have been, yeah. But he must be close to 45, right?
He's definitely older than most, and I just love the fact that he's still, you know, because it would be tempting, you know, you've been going hard for all them years. As soon as you start declining, to just go, give up. But I just love the fact that he's just keeps going.
Yeah, so and, cool. And that's where you got to consider what running provides you, other than competition and times, because you know you can easily lose yourself in setting such high standards and getting so concerned about not running that fast.
For sure. Mate. Super shoes.
Yeah.
It's a good topic. Shoes. What's your go-to?
Yeah, so I've got a few super shoes now. And I tell you, I didn't have them for a long time because I've always had orthotics, and orthotics never fit the original, the OG super shoe. You might know what that was, the Nike 4% Vaporfly. So it took me years, and I had a shoe called the Brooks Ghost, which fit my orthotic very well. If anyone knows Brooks Ghost, they're a very, very good trainer for volume. Massive offset. I think it's 10 or 12 mil from heel to toe, which is the 12 mil is generally the highest gradient there. So I didn't get into a super shoe until 3 years ago, which now sounds like a fairly long time. But, you know, it was end of 2016 when Kipchoge tried to break 2 hours and ran, I think, 2 hours 26 in the Nike 4% Vaporflies. And that was a project sponsored and facilitated by Nike. What happened next year? The market boomed. The super shoe had come out. The 4% up was available for like $400. And that I didn't get them in 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21, and finally in 22. I thought, even though I'm not broken, so to speak, you know how they say don't fix what's broken. I've got to give this a try. I'm an idiot here. I've got to try and find a shoe that works for the orthotic. So, saw a podiatrist and he said, mate, you got to try Sacconis. So I've been in the Endorphin range for years. And the first time I slapped on a pair of Sacconi Endorphin 2s 2 years ago, I went to New Farm, actually, you know, RV Singh. Yeah. With RV Singh, local Brisbane runner. And I dragged him on to sort of pace me. It didn't last long. I think he was unwell or injured at the time. I think he lasted a K and a half. So, I saw the back of him, but he's just stood around the side of the New Farm Park and cheered me on. And I'd run a PB at that time, I think it was a high 17. But I tell you, mate, going out of the Brooks Ghost into, and this wasn't a proper super shoe, it's a nylon plate. So by definition, the super shoes, as you probably know, are carbon plate. If you ask most people, that's what a super shoe is, but sort of a semi super shoe, the nylon. And I tell you, the bounce that they give you and the energy from someone who wore Brooks Ghost for 8 years, I was a perfect experiment, right? It was just life-changing.
Huge, yeah.
So, yeah, I had mates that talked to me about super shoes for years, along, you know, long runs and stuff, and I just couldn't contribute. I just shut up and ran next to them, and they were talking about shoes. So if you'd asked me about shoes a few years back, I had know nothing, and now I feel like I know a fair bit. So, yeah, I've currently got a range. I've got the Endorphin Pro 3s now, and the ASICS Metaspeed Skies Plus, not the Paris, the new one. And still the Endorphin Speeds, that fast shoe that has that nylon plate, and that's the number 4 range in that one too.
So was it just that you were concerned about getting injured that you didn't get a pair earlier on?
No, it was more so, Steve, like the narrowness of these shoes. So I thought it looks fairly wide. And the issue is particularly still Nikes. I actually tried one. I tried the Vaporfly, the new ones, the other week. The orthotics sort of sit in the medial, the inside part of the shoe and overhang the base of the shoe. So you need a shoe that has a wider base. So you can buy, you know, there's a wide shoe, or some shoes just naturally have that wider fit, and Saucony has worked for that. So it wasn't necessarily injury, but yeah, what I had mentioned earlier was that I suffered from shin splints for years, really like medial lower shin splints, to the point that I was taking like Voltaren before runs and having really, really like significant pain during runs. But I was a, you know, mid-20s bloke that wanted to run as hard as he could. So I ran through it, and then it fixed me. Orthotics and the Brooks fixed me. And the next thing was to run fast. So I had to go into super shoes, right? And I've PB'd ever since, like most of the country.
Yeah. I was just thinking there, the Hockers are usually a bit wider, aren't they? Have you tried the Hockers?
No, I actually tried the Hocker the other day, the new Hocker Rocket times two or X2, I think it's called, and amazing shoe. Guess what the price was though?
Oh, they're not cheap, eh? They're like 400
almost
bucks.
Almost 400 bucks, yeah. Oh, and could not justify that to the wife. But a real shoe that seemed to fit me, because that that offset wasn't too low. I think it's an 8mm offset like most of them. And yeah, the bounce that I felt from these, and I had my 3.5-year-old there too, Steve, and he just thought it was hilarious because he found out that they were called Rockets. He's like, "Daddy, you got rocket shoes on." Imagine what a 3-year-old's thinking. Yeah, you got rockets on your feet. And when I left, all he wanted was rocket shoes, like Daddy. He didn't get them, unfortunately, and neither did I. I bought those Metaspeed Sky Plus, but yeah, they've transformed running, haven't they?
Yeah,
we've seen every record on the road broken, both men and women, by predominantly Ethiopians, Kenyans, and I think Ugandans. And that's 5, 10K, half marathon and marathon since that time.
Yeah, it's we were actually talking about this morning on the long run, that we're so used to them now that when you first put them on, it was such a shock and you felt the difference. But now we're so like used to just getting that, you know, that massive return and the bounce, and that like we're just so spoiled. You're really critical. Like I've got a pair of Alpha Flies that I'm like, these are rubbish. I'm like, no, they're not. They're just maybe 0.05% not as good as the like first pair you put on. So you just assume that they're crap, but yeah, they're just they're so good. I especially think for like older runners, it just saves your legs. You don't get so beaten up, and yeah, I couldn't live without them. I probably still would run, but if someone took them off me, and all I had to run in was like big heavy Dunlops or something, I just couldn't do it.
Oh, for sure. The thing you got to be careful with, though, and what I see with a lot of newbies or beginners, is they run them for all runs, super shoes.
Yeah.
They're designed for fast running and they're designed for marathons. So, yes, you can get away with running them in 5Ks, but they are designed for faster runners as well, to run fast in marathons. So you've got to think about that, I think. But the debate of recent times is, you know, what's running a super shoe in an easy run is probably not that bad of a thing, just because they are so voluminous now and they can support you.
Yeah.
But they're still not as stable as a volume trainer like that Brooks Ghost I talk about. So I still think there's merit in training in a lot of those shoes, both, and then also both physically and mentally, to jump into the super shoes. You feel that, whether you warm up in them or train in the volume shoes in the week and then jump into the super shoe, there's something special about it. It's like chucking your race singlet on. When you chuck the super shoes on, you get in the zone, right?
100%. Now, even a training session, do you warm up in the big heavy pair of shoes and then put the nice racing shoes on? You're like, whoa, here we go. Actually, a couple of years ago, we did a massive group run in preparation for Goldie, and then we finished with the Speed Week, you know, the Burt Speed Week at Sandgate. and chucked the alpha flies on, and oh yeah, it was, even though my legs were sore from the run, it made such a huge difference. So good.
Yeah, and that was the original mission statement, right, from Nike, was that the 4% represented a 4% improvement over the marathon. So when you're talking about hours, you know, 4% can represent a couple minutes at most, but that's enough for people to invest, right? And they sure have, but you just got to think about how you're using them and what works. And I'm someone that's quite addicted to things, so I think neglecting them for years was knowing that once I went into the super shoe market, I'd just be the most picky bugger, thinking, like you said, oh, this one feels a bit unstable, or the offset here, the new, like I'm just thinking about these new Metaspeed Skies and their offset's 5 mil, and I feel like it's too flat, and that's not, they're meant to be for stride runners, and I'm not a stride runner, I'm probably more of a cadence runner, and it does my head in sometimes, but it's been a fun journey learning about the footwear and how it's made such an impact on the running community.
Yeah, so cool. I love talking about, I just love hearing people's opinion on it, and also what their favorite shoes are. Like, all the brands have kind of caught up now, so it's sort of, most people still like Nikes, but you know, you find a lot of people now are happy to run in Adidas or even the Pumas, they reckon are really good.
Yes,
you know the,
yeah.
the new Pumas, like,
yeah,
so they're yeah. all kind of caught up, eh?
Yeah, it seems this Metaspeed Sky and Edge Paris are the big ones at the moment. Same with the New Balance as well. I'd probably say that they're the biggest two rivaling Nike at the moment. But as you said, there's talk about Puma and a few others, like the Hoka. But yeah, that's, you know, Hoka. Yeah. Hoka were the first real, like, higher stacked shoe. They were for ultra runners to support them, and now they've got a super shoe. So, you know, there's so many out there. I reckon we're going to get to a point where they're so similar that it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
It's probably more like a, you know, what works for you kind of a thing, and what brand people are sort of influenced to be in.
Yeah, for sure. So, mate, with the future, you got any, like, big plans for the podcast, or got, like, I saw this question on another podcast and I thought, it's really cool. So, like, two parts to that question. What are you going to do with the future with your podcast? But then also, where do you see yourself in 5 years, apart from being 40? You've gone up an age.
Yeah, 41 actually. Age, thanks for that reminder.
You've gone up an age group in the park run.
I don't really care about that, but that's always the thing you can track. Podcast wise, I asked this question of Ella McCartney, and you guys had her on the podcast the other month. I had no idea that you did, because I know that you've had a few of mine after I've had them, and really don't care. I love these athletes being on any podcast, and love your podcast. But I did have Ella on there, and I asked the same question. I said, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And she goes, 5 years? I'm trying to work out tomorrow. And so am I, to a degree. But, you know, like, 5 years away, I've definitely thought about running more so than the podcast, because I was about to give up the podcast after 10 episodes. So who knows if I'm going to give up tomorrow on the podcast. Hopefully not. But running wise, I'll be in my 40s. But honestly, the inspiration I'm seeing from guys around me, like I mentioned Peter Bracken before, and these elite guys, I think I can continue to get better. It's just getting really hard, Steve, I've got to get things right. I've got to be, the main thing is consistency. And, you know, and within that is also specificity. So hitting a session, hitting a long run, number one long run, by the way. For any listeners out there, I think that's the most important thing if you're running halves and maras or even 10Ks, and then the rest from there. So I just think I'm going to continue to be consistent, and it's a habitual thing running for me. If I don't do it, it drives me insane. I just do it by nature and continue being consistent. I haven't run a marathon yet. I'm not sure if you know that. So I reckon
I was going to ask you just before, after your halftime, I was like, shit, wonder what that converts your marathon to, but. Oh, that's interesting. Well, at least you know you've got that to step up to.
Yeah, I think it might actually help me, to the fact that I've laid off it for a while. I actually said to a mate today running with him that I think marathon's on the horizon for next year. I'm getting out of that newborn phase. Next year, my 5 month old will be 1 year and 5 months old, and it's Gold Coast time, isn't it? So maybe I'm getting more sleep. Maybe we get sick a lot from daycare illnesses too. That's made training a challenge in the last 3 years, but I've still been pretty consistent, hitting about 70 to 80K, and I'll continue with that. If I was to go to the marathon, I think I could get away with a decent one at about 100K. I think anything more than that, I'm probably sacrificing time with my family and time for work and other things.
And sleep.
You know, as I said, as soon as I go to the marathon, what am I going to want to do next? What event? The marathon.
Yeah. You just want to get quicker and quicker. Yeah.
And it's just a real consumer of time. So I know I've got to do one, but like the Super Shoes, Steve, I think once I latch onto the marathon, I won't want to go back. And it's going to take up a lot of time, but I have to do one. I think it'd be remiss of me for myself and also for my father, I reckon, to see me not do a marathon.
Yeah, man, I was exactly the same. Like, people kept asking me, and I was like, I've got no interest in doing one. Like, stop talking about it. Like, and then I don't know what happened, but I just was sat at home and just, I thought, man, I might do Goldie. And then I entered Gold Coast, and that was the first one I did. And like, I have to say that it was the closest I've felt, like with my Thai boxing career. Like, whenever you might hear other fighters talk about this, when you lock in for a fight, you're training for, you know, 7 weeks or whatever for the actual contest, and then you got to do the weigh-in. Then you've got the fight day, and it's so mentally draining. Like, it's a roller coaster of emotions, and it
yes,
you're so scared, you know, because you're worried about your health and your safety, and you want to win and all this. And I just found that the marathon gives you probably like 10% of that feeling, and because I miss that so much about that sport, just having that, even just to get it 10% doing the marathon, it just kind of makes you feel alive again. You know, like the combat sports, you feel like a caveman doing it. It's so scary, but it feels so natural. It's weird. But the marathon, I feel just gave me a little bit of that again. And it was like, oh, the morning of, you like wake up and you're like, shit, I'm about to do something really hard. And yeah, I'm excited about feeling like that again in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, you're in that. It's crazy to think, you know, that you said 10%, and I'm sure we'll talk about which martial arts was it? We'll talk about that when
Thai boxing or Muay Thai. Yeah,
I thought it was Muay Thai. Yeah, that represents about 10%, but it is that real, I'm going into battle kind of a thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I was thinking today too, it's not just training for it months in advance. It's what it takes mentally and emotionally, especially those weeks before and after it. I get come downs after half marathon. So if I do my math correctly, I'll be doubly as coming down as I do after a half. And I just want to train. I love training. I don't race as much as I used to. And it affects training by running marathons, less so with Super Shoes now and the better trainers. But I think it's also, it's an emotional and physical investment. You've got to be mindful about your life before, during, and after it.
Yeah, I agree.
But podcast-wise, happy to talk about podcasts. Haven't thought about 5 years. Trying to plan the next few weeks. Mate, I'm just going to continue week by week, fortnight by fortnight, whenever they come. But I think weekly is too much for me, my life at the moment. So I was doing that years ago, but aiming for probably every 2 to 3 weeks. But I love that Road to Noosa series with Paul Goulet and Brooke Williams.
Yeah, that was cool.
But
yeah,
that just opened my mind and eyes to other people and wanting to mix it up with the one-on-one interviews to have those sort of side things. And that's, I probably credit the Inside Running podcast. They have heaps of different things like that. And it's cool to hear about, I think, different varieties of trainers, like, you know, Paul, obviously, being male on the marathoner, and Brooke Williams, the very highly elite female runner, more so than Paul and I on that podcast, living down in New South Wales, for example. And I'd love to get a constant sort of sideshow in the background, but even I don't have to be a part of it, and it just runs itself. And
yeah,
they could even just hit record, send it through to me, I edit it and put it up. Would be cool, and that'd take the weight off me running the one-on-one interviews. But I think there's something in that that I've really enjoyed, that experience of talking just to one person. I think you can overdo it at times when there's too much going on.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool hearing the episodes leading in, but then it was also cool hearing the afterwards how the race went and all the things that happened before and after. And yeah, it was cool. I don't know if you saw, I filmed it, but I was cheering people on around the course. I sent you a couple of videos of you. I like Paul was running with there might have been four of them running, and it was just a sea of people because it was just way too congested. But there was a marshal on a moped, just riding along in her own little world, totally got in their way. Like as they come through, I was going, move, move, move. And she just kind of like gave me a filthy look. And then Paul and all them just come right up the back of them, like nearly crashed into her. Oh, crazy. You got to sort that shit out, Noosa.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's just, I think these courses and organisers need to consider that running's becoming massive, and how are we going to cater for that, opening up, wider roads, more major roads. The Brisbane Marathon's got to sort itself out. It's been sold out this year, and get them on major roads, cater for, predict what's happening. We've got to recognize that, and hopefully these events just get better and better and there's more of them. We need a 5K. We need a 5K in Brisbane somewhere. Doesn't need to be on a major roads, but somewhere that can facilitate hundreds, if not thousands of people who want to run a fast 5K. There isn't any standalone 5K in the whole of the state.
Yeah.
It's that just makes no sense to me. There's a real market there. I'm not going to call it. I'm doing too much, but someone's got to put their hand up and organize a fast, safe, and enjoyable 5K.
Man, have you still got a bit of time, or are you in a...
Nah, plenty. Yeah, we've gone for an hour and a half, but it feels like it's gone for half an hour. So
yeah, happy to go ahead. I was a couple more things I think we should talk about. That's all. I reckon that Brisbane is screaming for a seeded 5K event, exactly like what you're saying, where there's like a sub 30, sub 25, sub 22, sub and then all the way down to the elite race at the end of the afternoon or whatever it is that they do it. And I think that would be massive, man. It would be so cool. You could live stream the whole thing, get a big shoe company to come on board and sponsor it. Epic, man. But, pumping music. You could have all the food vans. Like, I'm instantly thinking, you could have beer tents and all that, but it's probably too hard with the under 18s people that would want to be competing in that. But somewhere like, the crit track where they do the Anzac Day relays, like somewhere like that would be just perfect for it.
Yeah, I've definitely thought about that. You either got to have the course that can allow for one race where it's like any fun run. I'd honestly prefer that, but that would take more planning. I think to find the course that could cater for the distance, the wide enough roads, it's got to be safe and fast. Or you do what you said, you seed it, leading into the main event. Let's hear about the lead into who's training well, what's the experience, who are the athletes. Let's get some stories behind who's competing in it, and let's make it exciting. Even Sandgate Parkrun, that's a real part of the tradition now at Parkrun, but I've got an idea to get them off the concrete, put them on the road, just do an out and back. Even still call it Parkrun, but close it off. Surely it's now host to almost 900 runners, 100 of which who would have beaten me under 16 minutes 30.
It's like, insane,
hey. Let's use that flat, wide road and get them on there even. But that's probably a harder thing. I think the crit track or somewhere industrial or that's cut off doesn't need those major road closures because We need it. 5K is the main event that people know about, yet we don't have one. It's remarkable.
Yeah, totally agree. Even like a, you know, like an old shut down airport and just run it on the runway, or, you know, a couple of the runways.
Make it novel like that, yeah.
It'd be so cool. Just like a road race, like what you're saying, if you could get like a road that was just wide and long and flat and just shut that section down, you know, just make it one turn at the end, one U-turn and then back, you know, 2.5K out, 2.5K back.
Yeah. Doesn't need to be scenic. Just get it catered for the numbers and the speed. And, you know, the area around, what suburb would it be? It's almost Pinkenbar, you know, where the East Street Market is there off Kingston Smith Drive. There was time trials being run there all through COVID. That's perfect.
It'd be perfect for it.
Because
yeah.
there's hardly
Dead
any
flat.
Traffic. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that'd be. Yeah, I often say, man, athletics needs an Eddie Hearn to get involved. I don't know if you know who Eddie Hearn is, but he's like a really famous boxing promoter. And anything he touches, he just turns it into a massive, huge sport, televised and, you know, pay-per-view events. And if someone like him got involved with athletics, like it would go bananas. It really would.
Yeah, you need the right person, you know, who's got influence and weight and respect from the community. You know, like you think of us, we've got a couple hundred, I've got 1,100 followers on Instagram and I hardly put out content to, you know, follow influencers, young guys who've got like 20,000 something followers who are pumping out content left, right and center. Yeah. You probably need to get one of those sort of people there, supported by someone in QA or representing the organizations for these fun runs, to couple up, to have someone that understands the market, but then someone who understands what it takes to, you know, you'd have to measure it. No one wants to run a 5K that's not measured. You've got to measure it first.
Yeah.
Then you've got to decide how it's actually planned. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it needs to have a bit of that like traditional side in it too. But I kind of almost wonder, like, the people at QA and you know, all the organizations around Australia, I just don't think they want it to change. Like, I just think they're like, oh no, we don't want it to change. We're happy the way it is. You know, they need someone to rock the boat a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, and even at the QA events, it'll be very interesting. I'm sure you'll consider being out there this year, Steve, in the QA meets, but I wonder if that's going to see higher participation rates because it's been poor. I spoke about that 10K champs 2 years ago at the state 10K championships. Why am I even in it? I'm not even fast, running 35 minutes. There should be 30-minute guys there and women running low 30s themselves.
Yeah.
You know, with number of heats. And we're seeing races like that.
Yeah,
it's
crazy.
Not as marketable, I guess, as the fun runs, but how can we get people running on the track and in there as well?
Yeah, like, yeah. I think it's what you said before. We need to hear the stories so that you feel attached to your favorite runner. You know a bit about their personal life, what they're doing at home, and you just that's where the UFC gets it right. Is they'll draw people in because they'll do documentaries on the fighters and show them their, you know, their wife and their kids and where they train and their day-to-day life. And so you get invested in them and you really want to see them win. And that they're so clever. That's how they do it. They just get people so interested that they have to pay to watch because they can't miss it.
Yeah. And even think about the state of origin happening at the moment.
Yeah.
It's another sport where we know the stories of the states and know the stories of the players. We've got to look into that, how we can do that.
Mm. Yeah, sorry. My other question was going to be, like, running is just booming. Like, you can't even get an entry to these events. Like, it's like you've got to be sitting on the computer ready to go. Like, what do you think? Why do you think it's exploded the way it has?
Yeah, would you agree that like this year has been even like this year has been massive? Like if we were to graph it, the graph would have had a real shift. The inclination of that line on a line graph would have been
huge
a
jump.
Lot steeper this year.
Yeah.
So I do wonder why this year, but it's all had to have started from COVID, I think. People getting more active, getting out there, whether they were training or not, particularly the gym guys running more back then.
Yeah.
And then what we've seen now is the running group scene really pick up. And especially this year, hey, like there are so many groups. I wonder how many there are now. That I honestly think there'd be hundreds. There's groups that I could probably tell you 20 of them, no more, because I think there'd be probably triple that, but quadruple that. But the running groups are making it accessible. It's free. It's easy. There's no travel to a gym or payments to be made or commitment. You can just do it. And the apps are so easy too. I don't love the apps because the apps sometimes tell beginners the wrong things, but it's so easy to sign up for an app and get training out there. And people at work are talking about it. They never were talking about it then. So I think the accessibility, the free nature of it, post-COVID times, the shoes, the image, you know, the running clothes now look good.
Yeah.
They didn't used to look good. They used to look like a dag.
Yeah, yeah. That's
so many
it,
brands available now. The super shoes look good. You can wear tights as a bloke. The singlets, all sorts of colors. They're smooth.
Yeah.
They're good looking. The hats now, like $80, and they're fantastic. Glasses, like,
yeah,
you know,
it's actually quite fashionable, hey.
Yeah, I saw a post or a reel rather on Instagram the other week about it was like runners now versus 10 years ago, and exactly what I spoke about was prevalent in that reel for 15 or so seconds, showing a real dag back then and what it looks like now. So I think the image of it is becoming acceptable, because I've always been that running weirdo, you know, to my workmates, my actual mates, my family. But now I'm not so weird. It's kind of cool.
Mate, when we first moved to Australia, so this would have been early 90s, and we were like, my dad was a runner, I was a runner, my sister was a runner, and I'd go running and people would throw things at you, like out of the car, like, nice shorts, faggot. You know, and I'd be like wearing a pair of proper like running shorts from, you know, they might have been Nike or something. And I'm like, fucking running shorts, what are you talking about? You know, but like that's just totally changed now. It's just, it's nice to see that it is actually like kind of a cool thing to do.
Yeah. I remember talking to Pat Carroll actually a couple of years back on the podcast, and him talking about no one being out there. My dad said that when he was training, he didn't see anyone. Because I was asking about what running was like back then. He'd run K's around his area and just see no one. You know, if you run anywhere near the city now, there's people everywhere. Yeah. So it's more acceptable. It's safer because there's, you know, I know we've heard about attacks recently. There's more options to running groups and with a mate, whether you're a male or female, you know, so you're feeling safer and just more accepted.
Yeah. Yeah, like we do a lot of the long runs at Sandgate along the water there, where through where they do park run and that. And on a Sunday, it's not strange to see maybe at the minimum 10 different running groups running around there. I mean, I'm sure it's even, you'd get even more in the city running around South Bank and West End, all those running paths around the city.
Yes. Yeah.
Just be chockers with running groups. What's her name? Katie Dahl, I think her name is.
Yes, yeah.
Her running group's just monstrous now. Like, I think she started that during COVID. There was about 10 of them. Now it's like hundreds.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. Yeah. And she, you know, she's now known. She's on the news the other day. It might have been yesterday. Or she's been talking about these attacks at Mount Cutha.
Yeah.
And now become a real respected figure, not just amongst runners, but the community. And that's just amazing to see that it's, she's gone from her going, oh, we'll get out of the gym in COVID times with a handful of runners to, I think she's being in front of, depends. She collaborates, right, with different groups. So there can be hundreds there.
Yeah.
But clearly someone like her has had a massive influence. And I think we look at podcasting, there's way more running podcasts, so people have access to listen to it, whether it's yours or mine or the other plethora of podcasts out there now.
Have you had Katie on yours?
Yeah. She was episode, I reckon she was episode 5, mate. Yeah,
that right must have been where, because I've listened to her on a podcast. It would have been yours. Yeah, it was early on. That's right.
Yeah. But I'd love to get these people back on, you know, looking back at it in hindsight to have a check in now, because someone like her with her running and coaching, particularly coaching and the influence she has had, is remarkable. And it comes down to so many factors about her, but I think number one, it's she's a good person. And if you've got good people at the front of these things, then people are going to follow, right?
Yeah, totally. If you're a fraud, you it shows up after a period of time, eh?
A few trying to latch onto this market, you know.
Yeah.
You know, this, I saw an app wanting people to run 60K before a marathon the other month. What else have I seen? I've seen like running apps recommend like a deload week, like 4 weeks out from their major event where you should be running the most mileage and major long run. Like, you've got to be careful out there. And that's where I get a little bit annoyed that we've lost the respect for the athletes and coaches. Sometimes I think who have the experience and have the accreditation behind them.
Yeah, for sure. You just got to be careful you don't get hurt. But I guess it's like, I guess people that are going to take it seriously, they'll sort of dip their toes in with that kind of garbage stuff, and then they'll find their way to proper running clubs and that eventually. So it's probably not a bad thing.
Yes, exactly.
Ah, cool. Well, mate, we've been going quite a while. Should we wrap it up there?
I reckon we're getting close to 2 hours. I try and cut mine to now these days as close to an hour as I can. So, I hope I've said the right things to you tonight, Steve, and the listeners, and I've learned a bit.
It's been great. People put it on their headphones and just listen to it on a long run or something. All good.
Yeah, well, I appreciate being on the other side of the microphone, and it's been a real privilege to talk all things running as a guest, and definitely looking forward to having you. Hopefully I can do far less talking come this week and you can do all of that.
Yeah. Mate, you were excellent. Really good. I'm sure everyone will love it.
No, I appreciate your time. And, you know, if I've got any positive influence on people to run, doesn't need to be fast or competitive. Just run, just enjoy it. And you get so much out of it in so many capacities. So, yeah, thanks for giving me this chance, Steve, to have a chat.
Cool. Anytime, mate. All right. We'll catch you all later.
Awesome. Thanks, mate.
I'll cut it there.
Yeah.
Unreal, man. Hang on. I'll just press stop on that.